Good afternoon all. On the ApacheCon day, I would like to introduce my friend Robert from Adobe, who is going to speak about secure by default web application with Apache Sling. Thank you.
Thank you, Sal, I should do. Don't forget to unmute the mic, but anyway, that's what too many tapas do. And also going to a place which doesn't serve water, just beer. But I'm not complaining. Now, this is secure by default web applications with Apache Sling. It's going to be a bit of a mixed talk, so we'll both have a little bit of theory, not too dry, I hope, about security and threat models, and then some hands-on experience with Apache Sling and seeing how Apache Sling implements some of these security techniques that we're discussing. About me, I work for Adobe. I'm part of the Apache Sling project. I'm a PMC. I do a lot of open source contributions because I have nothing better to do with my life. So why are we here? Now, this little triangle is sometimes known as the project management triangle. And it basically says what we programmers like to talk about as a good, fast, cheap pick two, or a system of constraints, right? You can't have everything, you need to choose. Do you have scope in one corner, which is basically quality, features, security. Then you have cost, how much you want to invest in it, and then you have schedule, right? And all of these things are in lockstep, they're in pressure. You can't really pull up the scope without affecting cost and schedule for a given set of constraints. Now, whenever you develop software, someone wants to decide what to do with this triangle, right? Whether it's a project manager, a customer, if you're doing something on your own time, you have to take these constraints into account. Sometimes you want to do something like this, right? Immediately get to market, keep the cost fixed, really, really have a short schedule and deliver just a little bit of functionality, just enough so that you get to market. On the other hand, what is good for everyone is a bigger triangle. So contrast with this one, just get a bigger triangle. So how? That means you get more leeway for scope, you get more the same things for less money or more things for the same cost, and the same schedule, you can fit in more stuff. And the question is, how do you do that? Well, you eliminate some effort. Some of the things that you do regularly doing your application, you simply stop doing them, and not stop doing them as in ignoring them. Well, you can also do that, but by using tools and techniques which allow you to eliminate some whole classes of security issues. Now, I'm not going to pretend that will make the security component go away. You still need to do security reviews, you need to do penetration testing and all that, but with some of the techniques that I'll talk about, you can eliminate a lot of effort when doing security work. Now, since we're talking about Apache Sling, we have a short introduction to Apache Sling. Then I'll present to you a very small demo application, which will be our exercise for doing threat modeling and seeing how to apply various security techniques. So we're going to do a threat model. We're going to discuss what a threat model is, why is it useful, and apply it on the demo application. We're going to talk about security with Apache Sling. What tools does Apache Sling offer us to do security in a simpler way? Then a demo and wrap up with conclusion Q&A. So, Apache Sling, we're ApacheCon, we're talking about Apache Sling. Well, big surprise, it's an Apache project. We've been in incubation 2007. Now, last year we had release number 8. This year we're aiming for release number 9 of Apache Sling. So we're a pretty old project, let's say. We're basically based on Java, so most of our code is Java, and it's no secret we use, that's 9%, a bit large number for XML, for Maven build files, so we're a pretty standard Java project. We do Java and Maven. We have pretty high activity. We keep adding more commits, more contributors, and in one single day when I accessed this statistics page, we're the most active project using Subversion from the SF. So that's also always something nice to brag about. Now, Why would someone want to use Apache Sling? Of course, it's nice. Someone built this web application framework, and why would you use it, right? There's plenty of players in the web application space. So first thing is that we're content-oriented and RESTful. Okay, buzzwordish, what does that mean? It means that we have, I'll talk about it in more detail later, but we have a resource-oriented approach, which means that whatever you as a Java programmer or as a application developer interfacing with Apache Sling is a hierarchical representation of your data set, which means in turn that you don't work necessarily with SQL databases or NoSQL databases. You just get one unified resource abstraction, hierarchical and unstructured. RESTful, this means that we make it very easy for you to output your resources, your data model into various formats, whether it's JSON or XML or something completely custom that you decide to do. Lightweight, very small memory footprint and disk footprint. We don't bring a lot by default. Authentication, authorization, and lots of other things we bring in by default. So when you start up a Sling instance, it does. If you hang on, I'm just going to keep talking, but close the door in the meantime. Or we can do that, thanks. So whenever you start up a Sling instance, you have authentication, authorization, you have scripting languages that you can use, really a whole array of features which are very nice when developing web frameworks. We're part of the OSGI. I'm not sure how many of you have good experiences or experiences at all with OSGI, but this works really well for us, which means that we have lots of extension points, and basically everything that we use as an extension point internally is available to you as Sling consumers, which means that you can remove the things which you don't want and easily add on some other top things on top. And from a deployment point of view, it's just a single jar file. So that's, again, very convenient. Now, to expand a bit more on this content-oriented stuff, so here you have this representation of a repository. You see a root object and resources that come in this tree format. And one thing you have in, let's say, a regular blogging application is blog posts, a couple of blog posts represented here, which by itself is no miracle, right? Because if you write a blogging application, you sort of expect that to be present in your repository. On the other hand, you can also have images, right? We have images, JavaScript files, CSS files, fonts. So in Apache Sling, we have this resource mechanism which allows us to hold everything in the repository. So you don't only have those structured or semi-structured data. Binaries are transparently stored in the repository, as well as authentication authorization data. So users and groups as well, they are represented in the repository. Basically, everything we'll see a bit later that even server-side scripts, templates, jars, everything is stored in the repository. And that is very convenient from many points of view, such as administrative. You can take a backup of the whole instance, and you really have the runtime state isolated. Right, I mentioned that server-side templates and scripts are also stored there. Configurations, whenever you want to configure an application, those configurations are also stored in the repository. So our mantra is basically everything is content. So if you have something related to your application, it can go into the repository. Now, I talked a bit about the RESTful part. So if you have this Hello World blog post, which is in your repository, and then you have this parent's post block content, you can see that immediately reflected in the URL, right? So it's localhost 8080, let's say, then content block post hello world.html. So by defining a resource in your repository, you immediately have a way to expose it. There's no intermediate step, no controllers to write, no URL mappings to configure. And of course, you can add any sort of extension that you want to. Sling doesn't limit you to having one single extension or one single renderer. There are some defaults, but of course, you can add your own as well. The only missing piece is here that, well, when you render something, you don't necessarily want all the things to be rendered the same, right? So if you render a blog post, that probably follows different rules compared to comments. So what happens here is that Sling has this discriminator properties called the resource type and say, hey, this one is a page, this one is a comment. You need to interpret them in different ways. And the same would go for images, for users. And by combining the two things, right, a flexible rendering of a resource and rendering resource in different types, you can get to rendering all of the things in your repository in different ways, which is the flexibility we're looking for. It has a very rich persistence mechanism, so we saw that it's hierarchical, right? So we can gather, do a lot of things in the way which a file system would do them. So you can access resources hierarchically, start at the top, and then enumerate all the children of various resources. You can do access control the way file systems do it. So you can add some ACLs in various parts of your repository. And that will tie in really nicely with authorization, as we'll see in a bit later. You can transparently store binaries. So if you want to write, a 20 megs image file in your repository, you don't care whether the database will be able to handle that or where it will end up. The repository transparently handles that. On the other hand, people like many things about databases, such as transactions, queries, structural integrity, and those are also built in to the repository using JCR. And then you have these sort of things which are in the middle, which don't really belong to file systems or databases, but are really nice when developing applications, such as automatic versioning for all your resources. It's just there, you don't have to build it. You have full text queries over your application by default. You have observation, which is basically database triggers in your Java process. So all in all, a very rich programming model. When deploying, you have two options. You do a standalone deployment, which is the fastest. You typically have an Apache HTTP server, then you have Sling. And Oak Persistence has done something called the Segment Node Store, which is file-based persistence, which is really fast. On the other hand, the availability is a bit more complicated. You only have cold standby. You don't have hot standby for it. For high availability, you would do the same HTTP server in front, then how many more Sling instances you want, and then you would have a document-based persistence, such as Mongo in the back. And here, Mongo can be anything else that you want. It doesn't have to be a single Mongo instance. That would make a lot of sense for high availability, but you can scale out Mongo however you want to. Okay, world's fastest introduction to Apache Sling, done. Let's talk a little bit about a very simple demo application that we'll practice the concepts on. So it's a blog post. Now, that's the part I spend most time on. I'm really bad with Photoshop, so I did what I could. And then you have a number of blog posts. You probably can't see it, but this is a list which is broken in the middle. And this is a hint that the templating language that you use is actually very much aware of the HTML going on behind the scenes, because you probably know if you will to break off an HTML structure right in the middle without properly closing it, the whole design would simply be broken. And then we have this article page, which is just an HTML dump, and then some comments and allow people to type in text without being authenticated, which is very interesting from a security point of view, and then add them a funny face. People seem to love that, right? And this is the comment form. Okay, threat modeling. Now, this is a wall of text. But what's important here is that threat modeling is an engineering technique. It's not a software tool. It's not a management process. It's simply a technique that you use to structure the way you handle security in your application. And it starts with threats, right? So you need to understand how your application is going to be attacked, so attacks, and then identify vulnerabilities and countermeasures. So assets. Whenever you design an application, you probably have something of value. You can think of a content-based application, such as I don't know, CNN.com, right? News, that's their main asset, content. If you're doing, if you're a company which has lots of user credentials, if you're Google or Netflix or Facebook, users' credentials are probably something very valuable to you because people reuse passwords because you can then force sign-ins. Even if you're thinking, well, but I have nothing to give to the people, it's just a very small website, with they don't really care about me. Your server is also an asset because it can be taken over part of a denial of service attack, part of a spam gateway. So you can find something defined as an asset in every application or every deployment, no matter how small it is. So for a small application, I've tried to find out which were the assets that we have. So first of all, it's availability, right? If we don't have that application up, it's of no use to anyone. So availability is one of our assets. Again, content is something which is an asset to us, obviously. Very valuable blog posts, and we want to keep them and to keep them unaltered, so no one should be able to modify our content. User credentials, again, now the ability to execute code into the server, which ties back to the part I've talked about, denial of service and spam bots and all that, so we don't want anyone to be able to execute code on our server, and that's for us, and for our users, we don't want to allow anyone to execute code on their machines, right? Whenever we serve JavaScript, we want to make sure that only we serve the JavaScript and that it's not altered. So that's a small list of assets that we I would define for our web application. Now, trust levels. Not all users are born equal. Right, so there's at the lower level, there's an unauthenticated user which has almost no privileges in our application. And at the other end, there's the admin user which can do almost anything in an application. And somewhere in between, there are various authenticated users which can do, depending on your application, can do one thing or another. They can alter content, they can moderate, they can message other users. And for our application, we have three simple levels. Anonymous, which is able to browse and to add comments. We have an author, which is able to post blog entries, and an administrator, which is able to do basically anything. Now, threats. Finally, we get to the meat of the discussion. So how exactly are people going to be able to access my application? Now, if you haven't heard of OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project, I suggest you give them a visit. They've done extensive research on the part of threats in applications. And they even compiled a list of top 10 security vulnerabilities, including some like cross-site scripting, cross-site request forgeries, SQL injections, weak authentication setup. So for us, what we did, I took the assets and I said, okay, how is each asset able to be compromised? So availability obviously goes to a denial of service. Whenever someone takes our site offline for a denial of service attack, it's no longer available. Then it's defacement or deletion, which means that this is another threat that relates to content. Leaking credentials, obviously related to users. And then SQL or shell injection, which leads to the attacker getting the ability to execute code on the server. And finally, cross-site scripting, which is something that can cause the malicious JavaScript to be executed in the user's browser. Right, so now that we have these threats, we have to decide what to do about them. And this is a part that looks a little bit like risk management, right? You know you have some risks, what do you do about them? One strategy that this guy is doing is ignoring the threat. It's not going to happen. I have an open SQL injection vulnerability, no one is going to exploit it. Now, a spoiler, he didn't get to eat the cheese, right? So that strategy doesn't always work, or almost never works. There's a possibility of documenting the risk, say, hey, well, this is a known risk. This is what's going to happen, but I'm not going to do anything about it. You can transfer the risk. So for some classes of threats, you aren't going to be able to respond to them. And one good example is a denial of service attack. at the application level, you will not be able to stop a denial of service attack. You need to be able to talk to your connectivity provider in your data center. That's where, and he's going to talk to someone much more upstream. But mitigation is what we're interested on, in which you actually take a step and say, I'm going to eliminate this vulnerability, or this class of vulnerabilities. And this is where we get to see how we do this with Apache Sling. Now, I've hinted about this, so we have the application layered in a very hierarchical manner, which means we can apply access control policies upwards in a tree, so for instance in this content layer, and they will automatically apply to all of their children. So in this example, we say these are the authors, right? We have an authors group. And for this path, we allow them to do everything. And if we look at the effective policies, so this one, these are the policies which are defined just on the content node. We can see that they're inherited. We see here in the first row that this is the policy we defined above. But there's a policy defined at the root node that says everyone is allowed to read. So we can define access control policies in a few well-chosen places in the repository, and then we have basically secured our repository or applied a uniform security policy to all our repository. We can even start, and it's recommended to do so, to start by deny everyone access to everything, and then starting opening up various parts of your subtree to various groups. And this ties, so that was authorization. This ties in nicely with authentication. Now this is a sample HTTP call which uses basic authentication credentials and says, hey, I'm Bob with password Bob. I would like to post something here. And Bob is also reflected in the repository. As I've said earlier, users and groups are also visible. So he's stored in the repository. His group membership is stored in the repository. And what this means is that whenever he first makes contact, to say like this, with the repository, he can only use the parts of the repository that have been open to him. That's because in Apache Sling, we don't have, let's say, a technical user that's allowed to connect to the database. Each user uses his own credentials. So there is no way to do privilege escalation. Even if you would do something, so a user can only harm what he's also enabled, allowed to read or write. So if you do have some sort of vulnerable servlet or script, then Bob wouldn't be able, for instance, to override data belonging to other users. He would not be able to read product configurations from the repository. He would not be able to, I don't know, call APIs he's not authorized to, because the repository locks him down. So that's a whole class of security vulnerabilities eliminated from the start. Now, this is an example of a server-side template. You can see that it's basically HTML with some expression language placed in various places, like here. Where I take, well, basically I take my current resource and extract the property out of it. Now, you probably know this, if this resource happens to have, let's say, an inline bold tag, or even better, some sort of JavaScript expression, a very naive implementation would simply output it as it is, and then it would get evaluated. And there you have it, cross-site scripting. What usually happens is that people manually escape these outputs because they have to know. And here you have something which is placed in an attribute of a tag. Here you have something which is placed in the body of a tag. You can have such declarations in CSS, JavaScript values. So a human needs to take the decision, how do I escape this? Because escaping for an attribute value is different than escaping from for a body tag, for the text of a tag. And the server-side scripting language that you use is aware of HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. So it's able to understand the escaping rules that it should apply. So by default, it escapes everything that you tell it, that you output using it. So there is no way, by default, to get a cross-site scripting attack vulnerability by using HTML. Now, another class of vulnerabilities are query injections. Now, if you were to build such an application using a relational database, what you would do is probably have a table of posts. So, hello world is an entry, ID tooling is an entry, JSR305 is an entry, and then run something like select star from post where parent ID equals question mark. And that's a query. On the other hand, we're working in a repository, and if you're looking at the repository structure, you can see that we have this content block posts, and then all the resources under it are blog entries. So in Java, or using an HTTP API, we just say, I am at content block posts, give me all the children. Right? There are no queries, sorry, no parameters, nowhere to add an injection to. So that's what I mean by injection-safe APIs. You simply, for 99% of the usages, you don't get queries. You don't get to pass parameters. So you simply don't have that problem. And the same goes for comments. They have, you can always find the location based on this convention, content block comments, then the name of the blog post, and you simply list all resources from under it. And there is no query to execute. And that pretty quickly, I think, got me to the point where I feel brave and start to show you some code, how this happens in practice. Okay, so let's see if this is still up. Right, I guess this is visible. So this is the wonderful application I've been telling you about. And this is the actual resource page. I'm not logged in here. So I can say, hello, ApacheCon. And being a nice guy that I am, I'm going to try to steal your cookies now. Now, if I do this, this doesn't work. Now this is the, let's make this a bit bigger. So this is a bit expanded version of the template script that I've shown you. And you can see this is where the description is output, and by default it's very much aware of how it should escape it. But I can say, hey, I know what I'm doing. No, I've been doing web development for 45 years. I think I know when we need to escape something. And whoops, I forgot to actually start the server so it gets deployed. Let's start it. Right, and there you go. Escaping has been no longer applied. Obviously, we get nothing done here rendered because it's just a script tag. Right, reverting. Now let's see, I think I'm logged in my other window. So, I'm going to increase, I'm not logged in. It's admin, but don't tell anyone. It's not very secure. Log. Right, so let me magnify this just a bit. Right, so to the right doesn't want to go to the right. So we can see the effective policies here. And we can see, well, there are some denies. Everyone is allowed to read. And then we have anonymous, which is the principle for users who are not logged in. And when you go to content block comments, you can see that you are allowed to modify properties and add child nodes. We actually have a pretty rich security model. You can have lots and lots of privileges. Now, now I'm locked in here. That's nice. This is very interesting. Try and make this a bit smaller. Just a second. Okay, so now we're back. So if I were to add a restriction, I can see that we have lots of access control policies that we can define here. So we have reading, we have removal, we can have versioning, writing, adding rlink properties. We can even define indexes in the repository. So there's a very large set of access control policies that we can enforce in the repository. And if I am to remove, this policy, I think I should open a different browser to make sure I'm not logged in. Now, as soon as I remove that access control entry, and I try to save it, I get rejected because the access control policy no longer allows me to write anything in the repository. And the nice part is that I'm able to do this at runtime. So these are not some security rules that I deployed alongside my code. It's actually something that can change at runtime. Now, of course, if I add it back, so I'm here on comments. Let's say for a shorthand that I can do web write, which is a bit much, but that's fine for the demo. Now, where was I? Chromium. This one. And now it works. So this sort of comes back to a pattern in Sling where, so this comes back to a pattern in Sling where things, you are able to modify lots of things at runtime. So the repository is very dynamic. You can do permissions. You've seen me change a template at runtime. So these are also things which are independently deployable. You can deploy code at runtime. If everything is content, obviously you can deploy users and groups at runtime. So there's a lot of dynamicity going around. Now you might get the impression that Apache Sling is sort of based on scripting. I'd like to show you a bit more about how an application based on Apache Sling looks like. So obviously these are some templates. You can have, for template usage only, you can have server-side JavaScript as well. So we found out that it's quite convenient to have these helpers written in JavaScript. So it's a very dynamic, much more convenient to use compared to a tag library, for instance. So you can just, they live alongside. So if you look here, you have the common HTML and then common JS that live next to each other. And then the formatter is referenced here in the script. It's very convenient for doing for working in the for working with template resources. And then all of these folders, let's call them, correspond to ways of rendering different resource types. So this one is for a comment. A comment is an individual entry that you saw here. And then you have an entry for comments, which is basically this whole block here. And they're composed together. And when you assemble your page, you say, I have a block which includes comments, which is this one. And then you can have a block which renders the comment. And then going a bit up, you have this page, which is the block rendering the complete page. And then you do a include of the resource for the comments. So very composable, sort of Lego-like, where you take you mix and match stuff. And what's even more interesting is that you can have these parent templates. So we have a block page, and then we have a welcome page, right? They're different, but they share a common header and a footer and style definitions and all that. So we have this parent page definition, which is actually the whole, contains the unitary style definitions. And then what you have in here is something called the data slide include, which says, looks a little bit like inheritance in OOP, right? You have this and the template method pattern. You have this big block of functionality, and then you have an extension point, which says, just include content HTML. And in the scenario of a welcome page, content HTML is done here. And it's smaller, it's simpler, it basically iterates over the resources children. On the other hand, for a blog page, it displays the description, it displays the comments. And interesting to notice here that when we're outputting the description, so that's the whole body contents, you actually need to manually specify a context. Say, hey, this is HTML. I know this is HTML, so I want you to display it as HTML. And I think the concept of opt-in, or rather opt-out security, is very, very important here. You don't want to think about when something needs to be secure because it needs to be secure all the time. You rather need to specify, hey, I don't want this escaped, this single scenario, because I know it doesn't need to be escaped. Now, whenever we want to, let's go to this little servlet. Now, that's a simplistic Sling servlet, which simply takes all the blog posts and downloads them in zip format. And what I want to point you to is this request.resource call. Now, that's one very important concept in Sling, because whenever you fire a request, you already know which resource you're going to, right? If you're making a call to content block posts, you know that's your resource. And authentication, authorization is already done. So if you're in here, you don't need to apply any of that. You just get the resource with the properties that are in there. So then, as I mentioned, no queries. You just call get children and get all the children that are placed immediately under the resource, and you do whatever you want with them. And here it's generating a zip file. And you can see that I've declared it for a certain resource type. That's the welcome page, so it will not be invoked for the articles page, for instance. And to find out when it should be invoked, I gave it a zip extension. So, okay, this isn't very visible. Okay, this one looks better. So if I go to posts.html, it renders the blogs, and if I go to posts.zip, I get an archive downloaded with all the you can't see it very well in the back, I assume. But anyway, there's an individual entry for each. It's going to take a long time, right? So an individual entry for each blog post as a separate HTML file. Again, something which is very natural to express using Sling's resource-based model. And here I really had no, let's say, no way of doing this wrong. And one important thing is that whenever a resource is, you aren't allowed to view a resource. You don't get told that there's a resource here and you can't see it. You simply don't know it exists. So let's make a little exercise. Now, where did I put that? This is what I get for playing with so many browsers. There you go. So let's take this one post and exclude it with using ACLs. So for everyone, I'm going to deny anything. I wanted to save. So they shouldn't be seeing that anymore. I think I'm logged in with the administrative user here. Let's see, another browser. Okay, let's try using this one. No, I did something wrong. Oh, I was working on the comments, sorry. So again, principle everyone, deny all. And it's no longer listed here to me. And the good thing is that if I decide to download the archive again, I can see that I only have two entries here, so I have, again, no opportunity to make any mistakes. As soon as the access control entries deny something, they're gone for good. There is no way of getting them back. And to wrap up the demo part, I want to show you how a builder on the launchpad, how we assemble a Sling application. Now, a Sling application is simply a collection of many different artifacts tied together, whether they are OSGI bundles or content packages, let's call them. So we have a simple plain text file model. We'll say these are the artifacts I want to pull in. So we can have bundles like the MongoDB Java driver, for instance. We can do composite artifacts, so reference, import, complete other launchpads. You can compare a launchpad to complete application like a Tomcat web servlet container plus its web application. It's everything you need to run the application in production. You can store the configurations here as well. And you can have security-related instructions, which will get, whenever you start your application, those will get executed. Okay, I can no longer use this for the moment. Now, from a security point of view, my advice is to find a way to eliminate your manual processes related to security, and go for tools or for techniques that allow you to be secure by default. So stop the need for manual intervention. Build a threat model. It's a useful technique to allow you to find out what vulnerabilities are for application, to handle them in a structured way. You don't necessarily have to act on all the issues that it found, but it's a good thinking exercise, and it will allow you to understand the security of your application better. Apache Sling, my opinion, makes it simple to be secure by default. It has various components and approaches that eliminate classes of vulnerabilities. Of course, there is still security work to be done. It's not not everything is abstracted away. As a web application framework, it has lots of functionality that you would expect to find in such a framework, and builds up about 10 years of experience of building web application frameworks, so I find a very productive environment to work with. Flexible and extremely extensible. These are a couple of resources that you might find useful. Some of them are related to Apache Sling and how it's being built. Some of them are related to security altogether. So these slides should already be online, so you should be able to look at these resources. I'm ready to take questions. If you have a minute or two, I would love to find out your thoughts about the presentation. So either go to this short URL or take a picture of the QR code and fill in later. Thank you. I have a feeling I raced through the presentation, but anyway, if you have questions, I'm happy to take them now.
Any questions?
So Adobe is known for having a good software security team. What do you recommend for folks who are looking to get started on threat modeling but don't have a lot of institutional security expertise? How do you get started with that process?
Thank you. So I think I would start by identifying, I did in my presentation, identifying the assets, the things which are important to you. So why do you build an application, first of all, right? So you build an application to do something, I don't know, let's say you build a web proxy, right, to proxy other people's requests. Say, what's important to me? Well, the ability to execute requests. And how would people exploit that? Well, they will take over my service and then send a request, 1,000 requests. And if you do that a couple of times, you sort of get a feeling about what the assets of your application would be. And then you would start thinking, how do I protect them? Who are the people? How would people try to exploit them? And there's, I get the name right, I think it's something called decision trees or something related to trees, in which you take an asset and enumerate absolutely all the possibilities that you can think of how it can be exploited. And then you separate them into feasible or infeasible. One good example would be that I have a safe in my office or in my house. That house is $50,000. So how would someone get to it? How would someone get to a combination? Now, first possibility is that they would buy $1 million worth of equipment to break into it. Now, I don't have to worry about that, right? They wouldn't spend $1 million to get $60,000. Get a $2,000 car to transport it and take it away. Okay, that's something I need to worry about, right? So always start thinking about what you want to protect, and then go from there. Other questions? Okay. Thank you.
I have one question.
Yes, please. Sorry.
So the Apache Sling with OWASP. So how do you, because there are a lot of other tools which are available in OWASP. So like it's for finding out threats, or probably each application is different. So you would have different languages, different application is there where you can find vulnerabilities and start fixing bug on it, or probably find a security level. So how would this help?
So if there are multiple levels, one is you can look at how we apply these techniques and try to replicate them in your own language or in your own application, or find the library which does something similar. So for Apache Sling, it's a very pretty well-contained product in the sense that you cannot automatically extract the same libraries and use them in your own application. But the first level would be, how do I apply the same technique? So it's awareness and trying to find the same tools. The second level would be, if I were to start a new application and I think that from a security point of view, Sling works well, and maybe also I would like to try out a new technology, well, just build it in Apache Sling and see how that works. It's a prototype, you can always roll back from it easily.
Thank you.
You say that Sling is powered by OSGI. Does that mean that you can run it inside another or an OSGI container alongside other applications or other bundles?
Yes, you can run it in an OSGI container such as Caraf. We have someone in the PMC maintaining a Caraf distribution of Apache Sling with multiple features, so you can pull it in. I personally haven't tried co-locating Apache Sling with another application in the same JVM or in the same OSGI container, but that should work.
Any more questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all.